the Break It Till You Make It podcast. My name is Frank Farrell, and I'll be your host. I'm also the author of the thesis by the same name. On this podcast, which is part of the Digital Futures Program, I will be doing this podcast with my advisors in the first part, where we'll be talking about the journey I had to get to the final project. And in the second part, I'll be interviewing Catherine Fraze, who is the founder of Workspace Education. And she will be sharing some insights on project-based learning. And also we'll talk about the recent pandemic and how homeschooling might be relevant. So let's go straight into it. I start off the first part, and where Nick and Adam actually talking about their experience in grad school and their new roles in the social body lab at OCAD.
You know, joining the social body lab has, I think, allowed us both to kind of sort of step back and refocus and think about ways that we build our own practice and our own our research and modes of inquiry, you know, for the next 20 odd years or so. So it's going to be, you know, it's a reinvigoration process, hopefully. It feels pretty good so far.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think in the context of this, the only thing I would add is, you know, I always tell people really the only thing I got out of, the biggest thing I got out of probably from grad school is figuring out the questions that I spent the next 15 years working.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's been, so now it's like, okay, that 15 years feels like a good chunk. So for me, that was about 15, 16 years ago. And now it's like, okay, how do we, in a good old fashioned mid-career crisis, how do you come up with new questions and and get out of doing just the same thing over and over again? So,
yeah. Yeah. I remember when I was young, I remember going to conferences and looking at, so I could write fairly technical papers that would get accepted to conferences and would show a new technique or a new thing, right? So I could make a new thing and I could write about it. And it seemed like that I could do that at the level that was required to be at these conferences. But I was always really kind of struck at the people who were making position papers. So people who were looking it around at all the people who were making things and the direction that, and saying things that I thought were really important, that really kind of summed up where everybody in the room was at and what we needed to think about in order to move forward. They were never the young cats. You know, they were people who'd been chewing on it for a couple of decades, and then had some wisdom there. And I always kind of wanted to be able to do something like that, is to have some perspective that seemed useful to other people.
I think that has really inspired me, and also the fact that the simplification of things, if I can use that, like whenever you guys approach it, it's like, this is really simple. Like you talk about circuits are snakes are connecting things. Like that's Nick's approach to everything. Like it's good. He'd come down to the lowest common denominator of what a project can be thought of in a way, like, you know. And I was really intimidated coming into the Digital Futures program because I didn't have a background in electronics. I didn't know what a circuit was in any concrete way, right? And we were thrown into the deep waters, try make something in a week, right? And all of these projects had to be done. I mean, Adam prepared us in the first explorations in some ways for this sprint. But I just want to ask you guys, how did you guys come up with this? Was this always a part of Digital Futures, like these sprint projects, or is that something that has evolved over time?
I can start on that one. I think it's been a back and forth. I think it's of late. I think it wasn't always that way.
I think
especially on the sort of creation computation side, it's one of those things that Kate and I've been doing for the past several years, actually, just to get beyond the idea of the sort of linear course structure, where it's like, oh, okay, the stuff you do in week one isn't really important. Just hang out, because, like, you know, at the end you'll do something great, and you'll think like, oh, that stuff at the beginning was crap and not that important. So I think it's the sprint, but also the sort of linear or the sort of flat hierarchy between the projects.
Yeah.
You know, where things at the beginning count the same as at the end, because they're sort of equally important or can be. And I think, you know, the notion of the simplicity, it's one of those things I always talk about. I always find with any collaborators, and it's easy for me to find people who are a lot more intelligent than I am about a lot of things. But generally the people who I've always found externally, the people who talk about what they do as being simple are people that you want to work with. So, like, you know, the reason, like, Frank, you bring up the project with, like, the polymer stuff. But the reason why, I mean, I didn't know how to do that. I had no idea. Yeah. The reason why was a colleague, when I was talking to them about it, you know, and, like, I heard that they were, like, a material scientist and did all these crazy things and had, like, self. And I was like, how do you do that? Like, because it's so beyond like anything I could ever imagine. And like, I'll never forget like his sentence was, well, it's actually pretty simple. It's just, have you ever made epoxy? That was it. So, and I think, you know, I've found lots of other people who approach it the same way. It also tells people that you're kind of inviting them in to have a conversation rather than this notion of like, oh no, this is very complicated. You would never understand, which generally means they're full of shit. And like they're afraid to let people know that.
Yeah.
So I think generally when people are willing to, because you have to be able to also know your stuff to talk about it in simple terms. Like it's really easy to talk about complicated things in complicated ways. It's a little trickier to talk about complicated things in simple ways. But honestly, for me, I tend to bring it in that way because that's how I work on it. Like, it isn't like, oh, I figure it out one way and I talk about it in class a different way. Like, this is how I figure stuff out too.
I love it.
So I think that's, it's not an extra piece. It's just sort of like, this is how I think about stuff.
Yeah, that whole mindset, I think it's a cultivating a mindset that, you know, I can do it. I mean, it's actually at its core, it's really simple. And every time I come across something now, I try to think about what's the simplest form that I can think about this in. Like, you know, it's like it's a mental model now for me in a way, like, you know, if that makes any sense. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things, right? Like you just have to get started. The internet is wonderful. Sometimes it is a great way to find answers to a question. It is a terrible place, when you're looking to form a question. It's so noisy, you know, and if what you want to do is just get something going, the internet's going to tell you a whole bunch of different ways or things that you need in order to get started. And all it's going to do is put time in the way of between you having the idea and getting going. Right. But, you know, as you know, If you just start taking out some tinfoil, you know, or running the simplest thing that you can do, there's a lot that you learn in that process, right? And then, you know, once you've done it and you've learned some things, you start to be able to sort of separate what that noise is, right? And then once you can kind of get a sense of like, oh, okay, well, they're saying that because we're interested in the same kinds of things, but they think about it in a way that's really different, or they're using it for a way that's really different. And right. So I don't need to pay attention so much to the advice they're giving me, as much as just know that they're probably going to be interested in hearing about the thing when it's done.
It's
tricky. Like just make something now.
Yeah.
Right. And if you can, just do it and you'll learn a ton, and it's never a waste of time. Then you'll realize what you actually need, and it's not very much. And then you realize what you can actually do, and it's a little more than you thought you could.
Yeah. And that's what I found with the kids. I mean, I did, like, if you look at the actual workshops, they have the simplest of things and the simplest of format. But what I wanted is to cultivate a mindset, like, you know, especially this whole notion of play is really important to me, because it gives you this freedom to experiment, you know. And sometimes I think also Adam had spoken to me, and I think Nick also, about materials being precious, like, you know, and when something is not precious and something is so disposable as cardboard and tin foil, I mean, the kids had, they were just tearing it up nearly willy. They were making a whole mess out of it. But at the same time, they were engaging because they saw that there was an end goal. But to get to that end goal, they could just make a total mess and they could experiment, right? And I think that was really a win for me in terms of, oh, this play-based thing kind of can work, like, you know. And I also, for the facilitators, they didn't feel this sense of pressure where they needed to know or needed to be experts in some way, because I was not an expert. I said that outright, like, you know, I don't know all the answers or whatever it is.
What a weird expectation, right? What a weird expectation that there's someone in the room who's a super expert and knows the answer to every question that you could come up with.
But that's, I don't know. I mean, I think for me, well, I don't know if I've said this to on the student side before. I'm not sure if I've said this explicitly anyway, which is, like, I essentially, you know, for me, I treat all of this sort of all teaching experiences, especially of this sort of work, I treat them only as just another interaction design problem. Like, I show up with a set of tools that have some sort of guidance and rules around them.
Yeah.
That have some ways that can be pushed into world, hopefully be pushed into things I couldn't expect, and for it not to go up in flames. Like, to be honest, like, every time I teach, it's just a test, right? Like, all just another funny interaction design installation. I don't say that, but it's true. Like, when I'm through and so for me, I'm a sucker for crafting code examples.
Yeah.
Like, I like it. Like, and I like playing the game of, you know, they're sort of like, cause code examples are a coloring book, right? Like, but you don't want to give away too much. Like, you want it to be sort of a blurry coloring book,
mm-hmm.
like a part of it, because it's just like, oh, okay, I made a thing. It shows you what to do. You completed it. Good. Yeah, no. So it's like, I'm always kind of interested in, yes, you have to show up with something, like, because that sort of blank page, it's just isn't useful. And being like, look, this thing will do anything. And like, that's too hard. So I'm always, I treat every, it's like, okay, I've got a room full of people that have a lot of tools. And it's like, I'm giving them these sort of like, I'm just, you know, writing these weird things for them to work with. Let's see what happens.
I think I can respond to that a little bit, as I was on the receiving end of that, the blurry coloring book. I can honestly say, for some people, and sometimes for me, it was like, what the just happened here? Like, what am I supposed to do now with this?
Yeah.
You know, there is an end goal, and you'll say, come back with something. But that's what really pushed me, because I'm like, okay, I have these. It's like, I've been given flour, water, and yeast, and now I have to make something out of it, like, you know. You but at least I have and salt. What? Or maybe I don't have the salt. I don't know. And that's why it tastes like crap. But I did the same thing, I think, I don't know, consciously or subconsciously, with the kids, where I did not go in with a finished product that I showed them that this is what I want you to make. Many of the instructors, I mean, not the instructors, but the volunteers, they were like, oh, the kids always want to see the end product. And so that they can, what happens is then they want to copy it, right? They want to come as close as to, or many of the kids want to come as close as to the finished product as they can. And they try to, like, you know, just copy the thing. So I kind of only explained to them, okay, this is the outcome. This is like you gave us all the little bits and pieces, like this is the pasta, this is the foil, and you got to light the bulb up, and then you come up with, they come up with all of the creativity in between. And, you know, leaving that open-ended thing, I think, is really what I think you guys did right with us in, you know, in these projects, which is, okay, these are the ingredients, and now go figure out something and come up with a cake or something, like, you know.
But that's a tricky part too, though, right? Because like you have to, the end goal has to be exciting enough, but not intimidating. And like, that's a funny calibration I always struggle with, which is like, we can go through a bunch of stuff, and at the end of the day, it's like, look, everybody, you drew a square on the screen. And they're like, well, no kidding. I could have drawn a square on the screen really easily in a lot of other ways. Why did you just make me write all this code to do that? But on the other hand, there's always thing like, okay, well, it also needs to be a little bit exciting, but if you push the needle of too exciting, it's always like, well, I could never do that. Like, what are you talking about? So like, and again, it's one of those things to think about, especially in more distributed teaching models we're on at the moment, because like, there's a lot of reading the room that happens in these. I think as Adam would probably say the same thing. There is a lot of adjustment on the fly happening all the time. Just like, read the room of like, are people looking at you like, why? What are you saying to me? You're like, okay. And sometimes the answer is like, okay, let's take a break for 20 minutes and come back. That feedback loop is real, between like, boredom and the inspiration sort of sweet spots. It's hard. I mean, it's really hard to be like, this is something I'm excited about instead of something I'm either bored by or could feel like I could never do. So,
I always think about it as, you know, like somebody has an idea why they walked into that room, right? Like I mean, for me, it's often a coding class.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, they don't take a coding class unless they think like, there's a thing that I want to make where I need code to make it. So, the more stuff I can put in the way to distract them from that, the worse job I'm doing. Right. One of the things that I try to balance is giving them enough stuff so that they can get going. And then give them enough latitude where they can just start to think about how the basic thing that we may have just learned, how they can apply it to that idea that they had when they took the course, right? Like, did they want to make an art installation? Did they want to make a website? Did they, you know, want to start playing with robots? Or I don't know. They had an idea, and the longer it takes for them to tell me what that idea is in some way, or for me to see that they're actually starting to make some progress towards that, then the more I feel like I've gotten in the way of their learning, right? And if I'm going to put something in the way where it's like, okay, it's going to take us 3 hours to draw a square on the screen, you know, they could knock that out in Photoshop in like half a second. So, you know, like, why would I spend 3 hours doing that, it had better unlock some ability that they didn't have before, right? Or some understanding about something that they were looking for to help them build the thing that they're trying to build. Because that's really the way I think about it. People would come to class, and they would want to find out what kind of music I made, so that they would make their assignments somewhat like that, because they figured that if they aligned their aesthetic with my aesthetic, that I would give them a higher mark.
Yeah.
And it took a bunch of years of teaching to convince people, and for that to perpetuate, that I wasn't going to do that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Your job is to make your work, and my job is to help you make it better, right?
Yeah, and I want to jump off that, because both of you guys have been like guiding me on this journey to actually come to, I mean, whatever this thing has turned out into. But I didn't start that way, right? I started with, you know, wanting to make a bigger version of something that I'd created in Creation and Computation, like that little box, which was like with bells and whistles, which was like, you know, to tell stories on the screen. And I wanted to take the safe route and like just build a bigger version of that and call it a day. And, you know, I mean, you guys let me like Nick said, okay, go ahead, try it. And I did start off trying to make a bigger version of it. And I kept coming back to you guys and saying, okay, I've changed it to this now. And then you guys like, okay. And I was like, it's fine. Go ahead. And let's take the next step. Like, you know, and then I was like, I'm building a makerspace and I'm trying to do the workshops that, you know, and then the whole REB process. So I just wanted to know, like, how did you guys see it from the outside, like the process of this whole thing evolving?
Well, I mean, it's actually, I don't know. I find it's kind of similar to the same thing we were just talking about, to be honest. It's kind of over a longer scale, but I think, because again, it's one of those things that's easy to say beforehand, but a little bit harder until you actually do it. So, you know, even if you talk to me this time last year of saying like, hey, I'm thinking about this project. And generally I would say, if you end up doing what we were talking about last April, you didn't really do it. Right. Yeah. Like, I think it's important to have a start. I think it's important to have a, like a sort of topic that you're actually interested in.
Yeah.
But you know, topics are kind of big umbrellas, and there's a lot of projects within a single topic.
Yeah.
And I think where you actually end up within that kind of broader topic has to evolve. Otherwise there's no real point in doing the work, because like these aren't in these, like the sort of research creation type projects. There is no, we're not going to like get to your defense and be saying like, okay, Frank, you have improved workshop teaching by 12.3%.
Yeah.
Here, you know what I mean? And like, and here are the reasons why, you know?
Yeah.
Or like you're going to be like, okay, I said that I shall prove. And like, everyone wants to say prove because it's a good binary of like, yes. Great.
Yes.
And like, you know, put up the mission accomplished banner behind you and like, it'll be great. But I think, you know, what you've done was, which was the right thing, which is, the worst thing you can do is be afraid to do stuff. Like, the worst thing you can do is be afraid to add something else in. And you know, now you can take a second. It's actually quite, you know, the progression of the work and how it's come together does make a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
You know, like, is it, you know, was it, were you going to get here on like just by guessing at the beginning? No, but that's the point of doing the work, because like, if you, you know, I think even for the things that we, you know, we give you a little bit of external perspective, but the other important part is you have to make the stuff to then be able to react to it. Like, you also needed to be able to make the pieces, to see them, to look at them. Like, that's a new thing. That's a new object in the universe that you you know, you get to have a feedback loop with, which was couldn't happen before. And I think with all these sort of pieces, like that's what it requires. And that, and then you're like, okay, now we're here. Now what? And it's still not even linear. So like once you get there, you're still looking at all the stuff you've made. And then it's like, all right, what actually makes sense is this. So I think to me, you know, what you took the scary route, which is it was the right way to do it, but it's a slightly, because, you know, if you don't totally know where you're getting to in the end, it's always a little more intimidating. But it is literally the process of like,
yeah,
take a next step, see what you think now, talk to us about it, see what we think, make your own decision. Then we help you go from there. But I think, it's good that it evolved. If things don't evolve, then you just said it's just another assignment. And I think that's kind of how you move thesis out of being just an assignment, is take it somewhere that you didn't write about it and how you didn't think about it in the beginning. So that's my perspective anyway.
Yeah. I think I spoke a little bit to Adam also about this, and I was like backtracking a little bit because I was feeling like, oh, maybe I can squeeze myself out of doing certain things. And Adam was like, no, I think you can do it. And I think it was the maker cards, the cards. I think I spoke to Emma and she was like, oh, you're taking on too much. And I was like, and I came back to Adam. I was like, maybe I'm taking on too much. And he was like, I don't know whether you're taking on too much. And I went ahead and I'm glad I did it, because like even the podcast right now, like, you know, going to like Adam and got the REB started at the last minute, like last week. And I'm loving this. Like, you know, just like having the opportunity to actually talk about like what we did and how the process is. Because I think for a lot of people, it's like, oh, you may have had a idea and then you just executed one thing after the other, but it's there's so much of ambiguity in this whole process that I think I don't know, I hope somebody listening to it gets some value about like understanding that this is not walk down the yellow brick road and reach odds or whatever it is.
Well, but I think that's the thing, right? Is like there's a lot of people who and I think you at the time, you know, you're looking at this project and like, oh, this would be really great if I did it this way. But if I do it this way, I'm going to have to do all this extra work that isn't the work.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm going to have to do this research ethics board approval or application. And then they're going to have to approve it before I can actually do my thesis. And then if they don't approve it, do I not do my thesis? Right? Yeah, it's a weird, if you've never been through it before, it's pretty weird.
Yeah.
But there's, the reason that's there, it's a really good reason that the Research Ethics Board is there, right? It's to make sure that you don't introduce undue harm to the people who you're working with. Right. And it's so that's their guiding mission. But they're really useful, right? Like you put together your paperwork and you send it to them and you give them a nice description of your project and what you intend to do. And what you get back is this really thoughtful feedback from someone who has really read your work really closely to say like, well, you know, I see what you're intending to do, but what you propose to do doesn't seem to quite match with your intention, right? And they give you this like really precise feedback about how to dial in what you want to get out of the process with the way that you're doing it before you go and you make the mistake, right? Like, you know, thinking about teaching and it's like, okay, well, you know, it's this fun place where you have to do this really quick adjustment based on the way things land. And that's kind of fine because, you know, you don't walk into a room and, for some reason, we don't disclose all of our intentions and backgrounds and knowledges to each other straight off. It just takes too long, right?
Yeah.
People don't walk in and say, like, here's the stuff that I don't know, and here's the stuff that I hope to teach you. And, you know, then the person whose job it is to present material says, well, that's great. That just happens to be what I planned for today. And, you know, sit back and we're going to get through this and it's going to be wonderful. You know, sometimes you get halfway through the class and someone says, like, you know, this is all really fine and good, but, like, we'd really like to learn how to do something like this. And you see all the heads nod. You're like, oh, well, okay. Well, that's just, like, that's right next door. Like, I'm happy to do that, because it's like, we're going to get to the same place, and I'm going to get to teach you all the things that I'd like to teach you about. And you're going to get to hear all the things you'd like to do. And great. Wonderful. There's just not quite enough time for us to be able to, really be able to find out what has to be done all the time and why all those pieces are in place.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, like, when you go, one of the things that's really great about this and what's really wonderful about what you did is really kind of like the trust and the kind of leaning into some of these processes. And then the next time you go and you do one of this, it's like, oh, okay, I know what this is here for. I know what they're trying to do. I know how to engage with it, you know. And the next person who says, like, oh, I don't want to, like, have to do an REB project just because I need to ask 5 people whether or not they liked my thing.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and you can say, well, I got all this great stuff out of doing it. Right. And now you're, like, even better at paperwork. Woo.
Yeah. I know, the thing I hate, but I really value, I think, I mean, it was painful. It was giving birth, right? Like, I mean, not like I know what giving birth is like, but the REB process was, it was a complete unknown to me, right? But, like, when I was with the kids, it was so ingrained in me because I had to engage so deeply with trying to make sense of what I was doing, like how I was approaching them, that it really gave me a sense of perspective about who they were as children, like, and what I was, who I, like, how I was coming in as a external person and trying to, I don't know, like, am I trying to get a performance out of them because I need my graduation? Like, am I trying to force them into creating something? Just, and all of those questions were asked to me, like, how are you going to actually get them to interact with you, and how are you going? And because I answered those on paper and I had to really think about it, it really helped me, I think, in the whole, even dealing with volunteers. And although I've been in schools in the past at work, this was a complete different way, I think, of engaging with children. And I think it'll carry forward with me for years to come. I mean, even with my own kids, right, you know? So I think it was really valuable.
So that's where we have ended on this podcast. There's a lot more we spoke about. I'll be publishing an unedited a bit more raw a version of our conversation where you'll have all the candid bits, and we go into a little bit of tangent here and there. So the next part is where I talked to Catherine Fraze, and Catherine Fraze was highly influential in my journey in looking for people who are actually using project-based learning. Catherine has started a school which is called Workspace Education, and I was blown away by the concepts that have been put into place. She describes it a little bit as the Google of education, and has got a lot of kudos from Stanford University and places like that who have recognized her, you know, her contribution and what she has built in Connecticut, New York. I was there for a conference in March, and so I just wanted to bring her on and have her share how she built it and some of the philosophy behind project-based learning.
Okay. Okay. So I have with me Catherine Fraze, and she is the founder of IACLC, which is the Independent Association of Co-Learning Communities, and the founder of Workspace Education. Workspace Education I don't have words to actually describe how I feel about it, because it's just fantastic. I mean, I was trying to find a place that incorporates all of these ideas that I was having as I was doing my thesis project, and I came across Catherine's video on YouTube. Maybe you should look that up, but I'll let Catherine explain what Workspace is. Hey, Catherine.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
And I've been very impressed with your work too. And I really feel that the work that you're doing in creating inexpensive tech and just infusing tech with creativity is going to be a huge part of the future. And I think that you've found a way to bring that to everyone. So I would like to congratulate you on your amazing creativity and what you're doing and inspiration. It's inspired me to go to IKEA and buy a cart so I can hack it and make my own tech cart.
Wow.
Anyway, that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
So Workspace. So, you know, I was a teacher before, and then I did 3 Montessori diplomas. And then my children were in Montessori school, and they were okay, but they weren't thriving. You know, I didn't see the sparkle in their eye.
Yeah.
And I have always loved education and diving deep into education. And I'm like, what is it that's going to really, really light them up? Like, there must be a key to unlocking the innate potential, right? And I mean, I'm sure that there are homeschoolers or people at the moment all across the country having their children at home now thinking, you know, what is it that's going to light my children up? What's going
to be I'm included in that. Yeah.
Yes. So I was doing the same thing. So I don't think people, you know, choose to homeschool just because it's fun for them typically, because most people have things that they want to get on with their lives, but they feel that it's a really important thing, or that the school or wherever their child is in is not going to give them the education that they know that their children need to be successful. So if that's the case, and there's a lot of people who do feel that, we need to have spaces, not just in people's homes, right, sort of isolated from each other.
Yeah.
Where families can go together to co-create exactly the education that they know will light their children up. Yeah. Or if they don't know it at that time, right, they will have a chance to observe them in their natural state, in community, to see how they're interacting, to see what lights them up, and then surrounded by experts and inspiration, so that they can custom craft exactly what their children need, which is, because we're social, we're very social as humans.
Yeah.
It is going to be in some kind of community. So why not build the kind of community that children can have individual pathways in, that's going to nurture them and marinate them in the culture that is going to create the most amazing human beings, right?
Yeah, I just want to touch a little bit upon that beautiful circle that you created, you know, where the child comes in and co-creates their pathways in Workspace, like, you know, because that is, I think, was like, wow, like kids and parents working together to create their own curriculum and their own projects to fulfill an end goal, but it's so open-ended, right? And if you could just talk a little bit about how that came about.
I don't think that, you know, I was the one, I'm the founder, I bought the building, but I don't think I have a right to go go and tell a family that they need to homeschool this way.
Yeah.
And I think they need to discover that, because learning happens at Workspace, but it happens at home, it happens at community, you know, learning happens everywhere.
Yeah.
And the child is, a part of a system, a family that we put first, and we don't intervene, you know, in that special relationship, but we do offer guidance, and we're always there, and we offer a community that they can, that all the family members can talk to and discover themselves what feels right, what resonates within them. So, you know, I don't know what lights you up.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I might be technology, because I've been watching you and all the things that you've been creative doing. And I don't assume that I know what is best for a child either.
Yeah.
Right. But I know that environments can help them discover what that thing is, and can help them develop a passion or discover multiple. Most people have a bunch of different passions and get a lot of joy from sharing their passions with other people and working on things that they care about.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. And, you know, the other thing that really I've been thinking about when I think about workspace is the culture. Like, how is it like you create a culture? Because, like, if you think about it, libraries have places where you can go and sit down with your kids, right? And or you can go to a community center and sit down with your kids. But when I was at Workspace and we had the conference there, there was this culture of we come here to learn and then we come here to support each other. And if you could talk a little bit about cultivating that culture of this open learning environment, but at the same time, you are feeling like you're supported. Like, I don't know all the answers, but there are people around me who can actually provide that, right?
Well, I think one of the keys to creating community is doing something together as a community where you are actually mastering something together.
Yeah.
So you're learning how to do something together. So it's meaningful and you see that growth. So at Workspace or in any kind of space where you're trying to create this kind of community,
yeah,
you want to be mastering this thing. Like, how can we create the best possible education for all of these children, right? Yeah. And the best possible culture and space so we can be supportive of each other and we can just all love coming to this space and we can give up a rich relationship experience to every single Workspace in, no matter what age or whether they're educators or the children. And we can find other people in our passions and our tribe, you know, our tribe, no matter what the age. So we're not competing with each other. We are collaborating to master the ability to manifest an idea.
Yeah, and showcasing it too, right? You guys have these sprints in which you'll showcase it with the community, and that I found is so valuable to actually bring forth. Like, I'm exhibiting my work now, and but you guys do this on a regular basis because you give a platform to your students in some ways, right?
Well, I feel that most humans need to be working towards something to feel like that they're actually growing. Or learning something or mastering something. So you need, and we all, like, you know, get distracted from things. So it does help to have a goal. And so we do have marketplaces and open mic nights and all sorts of showcase opportunities, as well as spontaneous showcasing. So if your class has just done something cool, they could invite the whole community to come and see and present what they've just done. All kinds of things. But you know, I do really feel that if you don't have some deadlines, then it's harder to be motivated to finish that.
And I know you touched upon this a little bit about you being a Montessori teacher, but when you described it to me at one point, you said this is like a Google Workspace of education, right? Where everybody's doing all these fantastic projects. And that's such a dichotomy because, like, Google is like so technology driven and then Montessori is so analog in some ways. But I love this like mashup where this is like both these things can coexist, but at the same time, they it just makes sense, right? So if you could, like, I don't know, how do you think about it? Like, how did this come about? Like,
well, we do have some technology because these are the tools that this generation is working with.
Yeah.
Right. And I think Montessori believed that children should be surrounded by the tools of their generation.
Exactly.
But I think Montessori probably would have created something like this. So we do have technology, but we also, like, if you look around Workspace, there's just as much art and science and movement and cooking, and all sorts of different ways that a human would authentically express themselves. So that's what I was looking at. I made this giant list of all things that humans do. And then I went through the list. I'm like, well, where would they do that? Where would they do this? I mean, it was very, very simple.
Yeah.
It's really a creative sandbox for the things that humans do to express themselves authentically. And where are they going to find their tribe? And maybe it's in the woodshop with the people who like to build, or maybe it's on the stage in the black box theater, or recording music, or growing plants, or in the kitchen.
And I mean, that's fantastic. And now that we have this virus upon us, I mean, this pandemic, how is Workspace coping with getting kids to actually co-create in a virtual way?
Right. So And this is all a giant experiment, right?
Yeah.
Actually, people like to have that stimulation of having to adapt and try new things.
Yeah. So
for the average workspacian who is not afraid of ambiguity, it hasn't been a huge shift. We already have a virtual community using Slack, and we're now moving into a whole new different type of workspace that we're trying to create now, a virtual workspace in the sky.
Yeah.
The IACLC is going to be running beta programs for our launch padders if they want to jump in to create virtual community.
Yeah.
I need just to stop my...
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if I can do that. So I'm just going to put my phone in the drawer. it's not the same though. Like,
yeah.
Although, I mean, like, I do feel like we're having a great conversation.
Yeah.
And I think the children really need to be around other children. I think that it's hardest for the children. I think parents are quite, I think most of the workspacian parents are quite happy.
Yeah.
They're pretty self-directed, right? So the people in workspace, they still have their classes. They're Zooming in with their online teachers and we're using Google Classroom. They're meeting and they're discussing their projects in an online format. You know, it's working very well for some classes. Science has become was a little bit hard. Doing the recreating lab was hard and quite stressful, I think, for our lab faculty. But we're also discovering what works. And this is actually a fantastic time to think about what actually works in online communication. Yeah. Like maybe playing Scattergories, for example.
Yeah.
You can play online Scattergories with all of your friends at the same time in an online version.
I don't know what Scattergories is, but
it's a board game. But they have an online version that you can play together.
Okay.
And some families are actually having more family time. Like I'm meeting with my family around the world every week now, and that happened before, right? So I think there are surprises and some good things. I think what the outcome will be is that people won't be as afraid to use technology to supplement.
Yeah.
And they might discover that they can do a lot of the learning that they think they can only get at school at this time, right?
Yeah.
They might discover they can do that online and actually then allow their children to discover their passions and spend more time really discovering who they are as a human and how they tick and how they like to learn.
Yeah, I mean, even just getting used to jumping on the webcam with people, for me, it has had some level of anxiety before, you know, like whenever I have to jump, it's like, I don't know, if I meet a person, I am with that person. But when I'm on the webcam, it's more like, you know, I am in my own space. But anyway, it's just getting used to these new ways of being with other people, right? IACLC was formed because that's, I think, really important to the listeners, because a lot of people don't understand the co-learning communities. And you've created a fantastic resource. I was there for the conference and one of the biggest things I took away from it was the amount of support that you guys are willing to give people and free education on how to actually use the community and all of the resources to actually support student educators and, you know,
people. Right. Well, it's all about community. Like this is what I enjoy doing is getting to know people.
Yeah.
And I know what it was like and how lonely it is when you're first starting out to create or really transform education or create something new in the world. It's, you've got this big vision, everything's expensive, it's overwhelming, right? And you need to be standing on the backs of people who have done it before to make it easier just for your sanity. Right?
Yeah. And I would like to say anybody who's listening to this, like Catherine is totally open to if I could say that, you're totally open to actually having people approach you and approach the IACLC.
Yeah. And we had a lot of people from Canada this week.
It's
been an amazing week. I had someone Tuesday wake up. They said, I had a dream last night and we're a big community and we're all working together to co-create exactly what we needed for our children. I'm like, oh, yes, yes, yes.
You should see how animated Catherine is getting right now.
I get so excited because
yeah.
happens when you actually are co-creating
yeah.
you wouldn't believe how meaningful it is to see other people's children light up too on their journeys, and to be able to participate in a very non-coercive way in the education of a child. It's a privilege.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm going to end with giving a shout out to the ISCLC website, which is isclc.org.
Yes,
is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's workspaceeducation.org.
Yes, as well.
And those are the two websites. And Catherine Fraze is available, and you can contact her through those websites.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
Yeah, it's very easy. It's C-A-T-H at workspaceeducation.org.
There you go. You have a direct email now. That's how open she is. Anyway, I thank Catherine. I know you have got other stuff to do in the day. So
yes, I do. Catch up with you. I'm off to another exciting event.
Yeah.
And I look forward to catching up soon.
Okie dokie.
Or maybe on Friday for your exhibition. I'm excited to.
Oh, lovely. If you can come into the virtual exhibition, that'll be good.
I think that would be fantastic.
So thank you for listening, and that brings us to the end of episode one. There are three more episodes, or maybe four, I don't know, I'm still editing. You can turn it off now. I have a few people to thank, so if you're still there after the pause, then it's just me thanking people. Okay, so if you're still here, I want to thank Adam and Nick, Catherine, for being on this podcast with me. I know everybody's time is valuable, and everybody's dealing with a lot of things right now. And I really appreciate all the people who have taken the time, and so many people to thank along this journey. I really feel grateful for having been given this opportunity by OCAD University, and even being able to record this podcast as a reflection for my entire process. So on that note, I'm going to sign off, and thank you for listening, and I'm going to leave you with a little clip of one of the outtakes from the recording.
I'm just going to be a second. I need to forward an email from my upstairs computer to my downstairs computer, and I'll be back.
No worries.
In the meantime, how are things in your basement?
Things are okay. Well, how are you?
Yeah, things are okay. Yeah.
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 Is it a little less frenzied being in the woods, or is it?
I mean, yes and no.
Yeah,
so that's it. It's pretty good in my basement too right now, recording this. And I'm going to sign off, and I hope you tune into the next podcast. Take care. Bye-bye.